everyone. Welcome to the Crafty Garden Mom Podcast. My name is Tanisha. If you're a new listener, welcome, welcome. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. So I hope everyone's doing well. I once again have to apologize for my unintended hiatus from the podcast for the last 2 months now. Let me explain quickly to say that I fully intended and had recorded a podcast episode last month, but due to issues with GarageBand and me not knowing that the most recent update in GarageBand, for some reason, Apple decided to take out the podcasting feature. It allows you to record your voice, but then there becomes all kinds of issues when you go to upload it and then try and export it as an MP3. It will not do it. I have looked on Apple support for reasoning, and there's just a whole bunch of people as baffled as I am about it. There are people who come on there who are much more tech savvy than I am and say, you know, there's a way to bring back your old version of GarageBand. I have not been able to do it. Even following a couple YouTube videos, there's a point where they have something on their screen that I don't have. And so it's just been a bit of a hassle. And I had a file, like an hour long recording, and I just got so frustrated at that point, you know, when you've recorded and it's basically lost when the computer won't even recognize the file that you saved. It can be very, very frustrating. And at the time, I think it was like the third week of October, I was heading into a pretty busy time at work, and I just could not find any additional time to try and find a solution to my recording issues and the computer and arguing and struggling with Apple about this. And I just couldn't. And I was also just frustrated in general, because when you spend an hour of your time thinking that you're getting something put down on record and then it's gone, it can be a really big bummer. So not the first time it had happened. I think I said on the last episode that had happened to me before as well. But then that was just an issue of me either saving it wrong or something, but I was able to just quickly re-record it, but that didn't work out in October. So anyway, I have spent the last few weeks trying to figure out a solution, and I went back, finally, I just decided, forget GarageBand, I can't work with them anymore. So I was determined to go back to Audacity, which is the original recording platform or software that I used on my PC. And for some reason, I'm sure I mentioned this before, when I switched over to a Mac, there were issues with the MP3 software that you need to use with Audacity. And I didn't want to struggle with it at the time. And my husband said, you could probably just use GarageBand. And I could at the time, and it was very simple. So I used that. And now I'm back to Audacity, and I figured it out. I played around with it. I watched YouTube videos about it. I had a little bit more time this week to really focus and be determined to figure something out. So here we are. All that for me to say, I don't have a whole lot to talk about anyway. I say that all the time. Crafting wise, unfortunately, I don't. I guess you could say I've kind of been in a bit of a slump. And I've really racked my brains as to why. I mean, it's one of those slumps where I walk by my craft room and I can't do it. Like, I'm just, I just have no motivation to craft right now. Like, even knitting, it's really sad. Like, even knitting right now I haven't done anything. I haven't sketched. I don't know. And the only thing I can think of is this internal anxiety I have about some things going on with Samantha and school and behavior. that we are working on. For her privacy issues, I don't want to get into too much detail about it. Now that she's getting older and she's a little bit more aware of mommy podcasting and what she's talking about, and she asks questions. And she's, you know, she's definitely at a point where I want to be respectful of her privacy and, you know, kind of talking behind her back. I don't really want to get into too much detail. It's one thing, I think, when they're little and it's like just the average everyday stuff that any you would expect from any toddler or something. I didn't mind talking about that. But now that she's able to really, you know, really want some of her privacy and these things that she's going through and working through, I want to be respectful of that. So needless to say, we are working through it. It's all going to be fine. It's growing pains for both her and her parents. We are working with a therapist and the school is very supportive, and we've got, you know, some road to travel with it, but we are going to get through it. On my end, what I can talk about is my personal feelings, I guess, about it. And it's taken me a little while to realize that I have already known that I internalize a lot of my anxiety. And nobody tells you when you become a parent how much anxiety you have and how much is either just natural and that you can kind of understand, like, you know, oh, is my, you know, my baby has a fever and what do I do? And you have anxiety about that, or my baby needs to go to the doctor, or should I take my baby to the doctor? Or, you know, is she sick enough to need to go to the doctor, or will Tylenol and, you know, a humidifier do it? You know, all those little daily decisions we have to make about our children are just natural anxiety that all of us can look at another mom who might be going through it and kind of give them some gentle advice. Then there's the internal anxiety when there are some more serious issues going on that, again, for privacy issues, just, you know, maybe even you're a little embarrassed about certain things that have been happening, issues you don't necessarily seek out advice, talk to others too much about it. You kind of are, hopefully you have a supportive partner or spouse who is helping you out with this. And you can kind of bounce things off of one another and support each other through this, which is very, very helpful. I've come to realize that there's still some of the internal anxiety, the way I talk to myself about things in my head, that have become a block for me creatively. And while in some instances I can use my crafting as a creative outlet to work out my frustration, it's harder for me to do it or to want to do it when I'm anxious, because it's very hard for me to focus on, you know, picking out fabric or yarn. There's more of me that kind of says, I've got to focus on this issue and get this issue right first, and then I can have quote unquote fun for myself creatively or doing what I want. Like, and that's just, that's me. That's something that I have realized about myself and I'm working through. And a big part of it is taking that first step and just getting in there and doing something, even if it's bad. I just, before I started recording this and, you know, arguing back and forth and cursing at my computer and Audacity back and forth for a little while, I just went into my craft room and set my timer for 20 minutes. And I just did what I'm quote unquote calling bad art. And it didn't turn out bad. I'm going to keep going with what I started, on an art journal page. And it was good, because when that timer went off, I actually wanted to keep going. And for the first time in a while that I had just literally forced myself to go in there, clean up a little bit, and then get going and get started with it. So I'm happy about that. I'm happy that I'm finally able to mentally get there. It's a day-to-day thing. Again, I know myself, and I know that it's a hurdle that I have to work on overcoming and just continue to work on, because I'm very much focused on my kids right now and on getting this issue not resolved, because like I said, it's going to be a process, and I know that. And because I know that, I don't want to be here in April saying the same thing. I know that while I have to work on this issue with my daughter, with my husband and my daughter, and as a family, I also need to force myself to be creative, because in the long run, I know it will be helpful. But it's just that mental hurdle and that mental break that I have to make from, you don't have to stop everything in your life just because something isn't right in your world with your child. And it's a hard hurdle to figure out. So I've shed tears about it privately and quietly. I have laughed about it. I have talked to some very close friends, of course, my husband about it, my mom, you know, my inner circle. I've been able to help, have helped me work through some of this. But ultimately, it comes down to me, and it comes down to me doing what I forced myself to do just a few minutes ago, was just to get in there, and it doesn't have to be perfect. I had thought that I was going to start in my UFO basket, because goodness knows I have enough of those that I could just pick up and run with and not really even have to think about. And that's actually something that I've decided I'm going to do. While I have several quilt tops that need to be quilted, and I'm not interested right now in doing that, piecing and just mindless piecing is also a really good way, I know from past experience, to just turning off the noise, basically, both in my head and around me, and just going. So I'm looking for a simple pattern to use to cut up my stash, just very simply. There's going to be no fancy schmancy quilts coming from me for a little while. Not that I've really cranked any out in quite a while anyway. So yeah. That's where I'm at. So I just wanted to give you that update. This month and probably next month, there won't be a whole lot of crafty talk. I did finish Sam's socks, and I believe this was part of my lost recording last month. Yes, I finished those last month, and unfortunately, I already have to do a repair on them. These are the purple striped socks, and I don't even think I took a picture of her. I think she put them on and literally ran away with them, like ran off. And so I didn't even get pictures. But once I have made the repair, hopefully I can get a picture of them. They turned out very cute. She is in love with them. Purple is her favorite color. They made her feel very happy. She says they are cozy and toasty on her feet, which hand-knitted socks very much are. The problem is, she snagged the cuff of one of the socks. She has a pair of jeans that have a zipper, and I guess it snagged on most jeans have zippers, right? No, I mean on the ankle, like it's one of those embellishment to the legs of the jeans. So it's like goes from mid-calf to her ankle. And like, which is basically right along the line of the length of her socks. And I guess it snagged, and she yanked the sock off her foot, and it was still attached to the zipper on her leg, and it just kind of ripped out. So I probably have to repair about 5 or 6 rows, almost all of the cuff, basically. The cuff's a little bit longer than that, but. And I have never repaired. I'm pretty much like a patch it up with sewing a few extra threads in there kind of person, but this is not going to cut it. So I have to go back, and luckily there is a Craftsy class that I purchased a while ago when there was a sale going on, and it's all the whole class is about fixing knitting mistakes. And my mother-in-law, who is a knitter also, she's the one who recommended the class to me, and she said it's excellent. It's very well done. She has found, she's got a lot of use from it. So when I have a chance, I will review. And when I spoke to her about it, she said, oh yeah, she talks about how to fix something like just like what you need to do. So I'm going to try and find that section. I want to watch the whole class, but specifically to fix these socks, I want to find that section because she said she does talk about socks and ribbing and that kind of thing and using a crochet hook to fix it. So hopefully it's not too difficult. I don't know. If not, hopefully she'll just show me on that class how to rip back the whole cuff and then just knit the cuff over again, which is not a big deal. It's just a 2x2 knit and purl rib. So, of course, because I finished Sam socks, I need to work on and finish, need to start and work on Maddie's striped socks, which are in the same Knit Picks Felici yarn, which, if I haven't already said, is fabulous, fabulous sock yarn. I now am a believer, and I now know why this is the stuff of legend and why, although Knit Picks discontinued it, every once in a while, they bring back some skeins of it, and you can... if you're lucky and you get the email from them and you get on their website on time, you can get yourself some skeins, which is what I did the last time they offered it. And I bought the purple stripe, which I think is called Countess for Sam. And I bought more of a jelly bean looking stripe for Maddie. It's got a lot of pinks in it, which is her color. So I'm going to start those. But like I said, my mojo for all things crafting, including knitting, has won. So after I finish Sam's socks, while I have several projects and skeins of yarn to use in mind, I have not had the motivation to cast on anything. So other than measuring Maddie's foot, I have not progressed at all with her socks. So I have a little quiet time this Thanksgiving weekend, and I'm going to cast on her socks and see if I can get a little bit of the toe and foot done maybe this weekend. And hopefully that will kind of spur my momentum again to working on them, because her foot isn't big. I mean, it shouldn't take me very long at all to do the pair of socks for her. So that's what I have pretty much up and coming. I'm going to do a little more art journaling. I'm going to work on finding... planning to find a pattern. I might just sew a bunch of 5, 6, or 7-inch squares together in some of this massive stash of fabric I have that I haven't touched in quite a while and just call it a day. I looked around actually, and we don't, other than the table runner I think I made last year, we don't have a Christmas quilt like to snuggle up on the couch with, or just to drape over the back of the couch for decoration. And I do have, I believe it's either a couple charm packs or a layer cake of a Christmas line. And I'm drawing a blank as to what it's called. But yeah, I think maybe that might do it and just call it a day. Or maybe, what's it called? I like the Disappearing Nine patch, and I like the Yellow Brick Road pattern as well. That's kind of a classic, simple, pretty much a no-brainer kind of project. That's what I'm in the mood for right now. So, not too fancy, sorry. For fancier stuff, please go over to Pam at the Hip to Be a Square podcast, Daisy at the Very Lazy Daisy podcast, Francis at the Off Kilter Quilt podcast. Go get the fancy stuff from them. If you want simple and lame, come here. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so that's what's been going on. So, for a little bit more content, while I have not been that prolific on either podcasting or blogging. Yeah, my blog is like crickets over there. If you type in craftygardenmom.com, don't be surprised if all you hear in your sound, turn your sound down, because you'll just hear crickets come out of your computer volume. That's all you'll hear. Just to bring you up to date, I had a birthday in late October. Thank you. If you are one of the many wonderful people who sent me a wonderful birthday wish, I felt the love. I had a very nice birthday. I took that week off of work, and instead of doing any crafting, I purged. I was in a mood to purge more from my house. As I said at the very beginning of this year is about simplifying for me. And while I've met my goals in some respects, simplifying, unfortunately, for you as my wonderful listeners has also meant simplifying some things in social media. This year, I'm not pod fading. I'm not intending to blog fade. I think it's just a phase right now in my life where my focus has had to be elsewhere. And I spoke a little bit more about this also in the September episode about some other things going on in my life that aren't helping with my anxiety and just the things going on. But I'm coming up on 5 years of podcasting, and one thing I know and I am so, so thankful for, and since this is the day after Thanksgiving that I'm recording, I am feeling extra thankful, is knowing that you people stick like glue, and it's awesome. It's very awesome. I've told a friend of mine who I've known for now over 20 years, I'm like, we're like glue. I'm like, you just stick. And she's a friend who I may not talk to her for 6 months or 7 months, but when we get on the phone, it's like we pick up a conversation we were just having. It's wonderful. It's weird and wonderful. She's just someone that I know will always, always be in my life. She just always will. And she said the same thing about me. She's like, you don't have to be right there for me to know you're there. And it's wonderful. And that's what's awesome about podcasting and having been doing this now for almost 5 years. You guys don't have to be right here beside me in the room for me to know that you're there. And it's just so awesome. Thank you very much for your loyalty. And even if this is your very first episode, and let me just insert here, please don't let this be your first episode. Go back and listen to some previous ones where I'm not so nuts right in my life. I feel a little bad. The last couple episodes have kind of been, it's all crazy! Don't listen to me rant and rave about my kids driving me nuts. And trying not to substitute alcohol all the time for the craziness for crafting, you know? Anyway. Thank you very much. I am so thankful for you because I know, you know, it's just great to know that you're willing to listen to me when I can and am able to record and talk to you. So I'm very, very appreciative of it. So I thought that I would catch up on some questions that I've had because while I have not blogged a whole lot, I try and get on Facebook now and then. There is a great Twilters group. If you're not a part of it, please find it on Facebook and request to join. If you are a podcast listener, you will more than likely be accepted to join or accepted into the group. While I don't post there a whole lot, I go there several times a week and see what everybody's up to. Believe me, I try and stay connected that way. But I also get emails. I get several a week, sometimes one or two a day surprise me in my box. And it's TanishaQuilts@yahoo.com. And like I said, you guys are wonderful. And I received quite a few fabulous, fabulous emails of encouragement and support and follow-up questions from the last episode where I talked a little bit more about what was going on in my life. And I can't thank you enough for that. I really can't. But some general questions did come up from some newer listeners who may not have know all about me personally. So I did get the How Long Have I Been Knitting and Quilting. So for those of you who are newer, quilting and sewing I have been doing a lot longer. I've probably been doing, I've been sewing since I was 6 or 7 years old, and I'm 42 now. And so I've been doing that a long time. My aunt taught me to sew on a sewing machine. And quilting, early teens, I would say, maybe-ish. I got really, really into it like 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. I was just a quilting machine. I was probably cranking out 2 or 3 quilting a day, Eleanor Burns patterns a week. I mean, just cranking them out. And was hilarious to my mom. And I think my mom has one of those left. I think she has one left. You know, we were giving them, I was giving away, my mom was giving them away. We were giving them to charities. I was a part of several charitable groups in high school, and I got several of my friends to make quilts with me. So we lived in Southern California, where, you know, other than maybe a lap quilt and the quilt that I had on my bed, we really didn't need quilts for warmth. And my mom, she kept several around for decoration, but at the time, you know, this is the early 90s-ish. Yeah, late 80s. The fabric selection was a lot different than it is today. I mean, it was, I think at the time we didn't even call it quilting cotton. I think it was called calico. And there was a store where we would go to called the Calico Spot or something, Calico Patch or something like that. And she had very neutral colors, and it was, you know, very country looking. And that's what there was, so that's what I used. And my mom was more of a, not modern, but like traditional, more like what I go with in terms of neutral, but more richer, like browns and fall colors. And I was using, you know, roses or mauve and taupe kind of colors, and it just, it didn't go so much. So she didn't really decorate with a whole lot of the quilts, and at the time I didn't really care. I wasn't like badgering my mom to use my quilts around the house or anything. So I didn't really keep a whole lot. So I don't have a whole lot of my earlier quilts. Knitting, I learned to knit when I was in college. I think I took a class at the local knitting shop where I went to school up in Syracuse, New York. There was one nearby a campus at the time. And just on a whim, me and a friend decided to take a knitting class. She was offering a free beginner like lesson for 2 hours. And then if you wanted to learn more, you paid for more of classes. And I did that, and I got hooked. And I was up in Syracuse, New York, so you always needed a scarf and a hat and some mittens. So I knit several pairs of those. And then it just kind of fell off. I got busy with my, you know, my first job out of college. And looking back, I should have taken advantage of the opportunity because I was commuting from Connecticut to New York City daily for my first job. I should have used that time on Metro North to knit, but instead I just read. I got back into reading more because when I was in college, you know, you read quite a few books in your degree. Like, you're spending most of your time just studying so much. And I was taking a heavy course load that my pleasure reading, I don't think I can remember a book that I really read other than for class, for pleasure. And then when I had the first job and I was like, oh, I don't have to read a textbook anymore, or I don't have to read this required book on women's independence, you know, or freedom or whatever, for class, for a paper. So now it was for pleasure. So I got back into reading in a big way. And so that's what I did. And then recently, in the last couple of years, I picked just, because I have crafters ADD and I was back into crafting, I picked it back up. And what's really funny, I wouldn't say it was like riding a bike where you pick it back up. I picked it up back up very quickly, but I didn't feel like a complete beginner. Like, it was one of those where I was approaching a quote unquote new craft with a sense of, even if it's a little bit of fiddliness to figure out, you've done this before, so you can figure it out. Like, just take your time with it and you'll figure it out. And that's exactly how it worked out. I still don't knit very complicated things because I'm a very slow knitter. One, because I hate the feeling of dropping stitches, and I'm not at all comfortable fixing mistakes, which is why I need to watch that Craftsy class. And two, because I have slight arthritis in my hands where I can only knit for now probably 20 to 30 minutes, depending on the size of the needle and the type of yarn, at a time before my hands start to ache. And depending on the type of project, if it's a sock, I can get, you know, a decent amount done on a sock that's, you know, 45 to 55 stitches around, versus a shawl, which might be a couple hundred stitches. So I might just get one or two rows out of that in 15 to 20 minutes versus, you know, 8 to 10 or 12 rows on a sock. So it depends on the project, or a hat. It depends on the project how quickly I can make it. But it's really in front of the TV kind of crafting for me, because I've become comfortable enough with most of the simple patterns I choose, where they're mainly knit stitches or purl stitches, that I don't have to look at my knitting all the time for every single stitch. I probably look at it every 5 or 6 stitches, so I can watch a show, except my Korean dramas. I've said this before. I figured out I can do 2 of 3 things. I can knit and watch, I can watch and read, but I can't knit, watch, and read subtitles. So unfortunately, I can't knit and watch my Korean dramas. And lately, that's pretty much what I've been watching. So that's another reason that I haven't really picked up much knitting, because I've been watching Korean dramas and enjoying them. I've watched some really good ones lately. So that's the story about my knitting and quilting. Let me stick to the crafting questions, because there's a couple that kind of change gears completely. Oh, how do I manage many craft projects and UFOs? Anne P. had that question because she's struggling with, she's the type of person who likes to just work on one thing at a time, but she gets bored easily. Yeah, I do too. That's okay. This is, I've taken the idea that, I don't know, maybe I've talked about this before, but over time I've come to realize that you don't have to finish every project that you start. Now, I completely get if you're the type of personality that you have to finish everything you start, like it drives you nuts. I get that. Where I'm coming from, though, is, and I think Sandy from Quilting for the Rest of Us podcast and blog has spoken about this as well. She's also at a point in her crafting where sometimes you're just picking up that project to learn the technique. And once you've figured out the technique, you don't necessarily feel you have to finish that specific project. Even if it's a kit and you spent money on it, you know. Now, if, you know, The frugalness in me says, if you've spent several hundred dollars on the kit, like, you know, the McKenna Ryan quilt kits that I have in my drawer that need to be worked on, I haven't started those because I don't want to make myself feel too bad that I started something that cost several hundred dollars and have not finished it. I'd rather not have started it at all, have it sitting there waiting for me until I'm ready to go with it and then work on it to completion, than just feel like it's just another UFO. But if you've spent, you know, a small amount of money, subjectively speaking, I guess, and you decide that, okay, I figured out this technique, but I'm not crazy about either the project, or I'm just not feeling this project anymore, it's not my style, or you know what, here's 2 or 3 other shiny things that I want to learn or work on, I think it's fine. I think, you know, I say that's what you need to do. You know, there's just so many fun things people are trying. And I feel that way both about whether it's an art project, like art with paint or art journaling. Some, you know, I take classes and I've paid for classes, and really it's not necessarily to make the exact same thing that teacher has made, because I don't really like to be a copycat that way, in art journaling and my art. But I just want to learn the technique. I want to learn how she got those layers that way, and, you know, how they make it look a certain way, or some of the, how do you use those particular products that I've never used before. But I don't necessarily need to make the canvas that they've made to have on my wall. I've got full walls as it is. I'm just looking to make the technique. And the class, the cost of the class, even if it was, let's say, $100, $150, if that's what's in my disposable fund that I have for that kind of thing, I don't consider it a waste of money. Like, I got out of it what I really wanted to get out of it. And even if I don't make the final project, I feel that I got my money's worth if I learned and am comfortable with the way the teacher explained and showed the technique. And I have taken some fabulous classes that probably in, you know, 5 years ago, I would have gone, oh, you will never pay that much money for that kind of class. And then you learn about the artist and you admire the work of the artist and what they're doing. And you just figure, I want to learn it too. And you're willing to pay it. And that can be for any craft. That can be for knitting. That can be for quilting, you know, whatever. But I think a lot of times, once you are comfortable and you know the basics, let's say of quilting, there are going to be teachers that you just want to learn how they make, what their techniques are and their little tips and tricks, but you don't necessarily want to make the exact same quilt that they make. You may want to design your own. You may want to make that pattern, but in completely different fabrics, you know, and that's fine and well and good. And so in terms of managing multiple craft projects, ultimately, you know, I think it may be time to look through them and decide what you need to let go of. Not too long ago, I think early in the summer, I donated probably 7 or 8 UFOs that had just been sitting there for years. I mean, I think one of them I probably had supposedly going since 2004 or 5. And I just decided, you know what? It's still a great kit. It was a kit, but you're never going to finish this. You learned the technique that you wanted, and these are not fabrics that you are really interested in working with anymore, and just, you need to let this go. And it was hard because, again, it's something that, for whatever reason, for the last 10 years, I'd been holding on to, but I just decided, you know, the pile is getting too high for you to be happy with. There's plenty of stuff in here that, while it's still quality stuff, it's still good. It needs to be quality and good for somebody else. And it's time to just move on. So I got in contact with one of the ladies I'd run into at my daughter's school, who is an active member in our guild here locally. And I asked her, you know, do you want this or do you think somebody else would want this? And she said, yeah, one of the small groups that I'm a part of, they love to get this kind of stuff. So, you know, they love to finish this kind of stuff either for charity or for themselves or for their, when they do their quilt show every other year, they have like a little market of stuff and they put those kinds of finished items in it. So I was like, here, have it, take it. Bless it to somebody else. And I really don't even think about it too much in specific. So I would say part of the way to manage that is to go through them and decide what are the projects or UFOs that were just simply there for you to learn the technique. And now that you've learned it, and you just need to decide, do I really, really want to finish this? Or is it just something I'm holding on to because I think I should finish it? Or can I use the technique that I learned on some fabric that I more recently purchased and love even more, and just bless this project on to someone else who will get more out of it than I will in the next 5 years before I even get around to it again. Or, you know, you just need to decide possibly a schedule of, I'm going to finish one of these every other month or one of these every 3 months. I will focus on finishing a project. Again, this is for people who are not driven crazy by having the pile of UFOs. If you're that person, you probably don't already have a pile of UFOs, but yeah, a lot of us are. A lot of us do just, you end up with more projects than you ever thought you would when you first started down this road. Whether it's sewing or knitting, there are so many knitters, because I listen to podcasts and watch some podcasts where they talk about their growing and growing stash. Some of them podcast on video in front of their huge yarn stashes, and it's like drool envy. But on the other hand, I do think to myself, in two lifetimes, you will not knit all of that yarn. It's crazy. But, you know, I can't speak to anybody's or judge anybody else's stash, especially looking at my own. I'm certainly not going to do that. So that's my answer to that. So those two questions right there, for now, I think I'm just going to leave it at those two questions. And I think several of the others in terms of motherhood, and I think there were a couple about my job and things, I will probably save for another episode. I think I'll just leave the answers to the two questions that I answered. Those were probably the ones that were most duplicated in some form or another, the question was worded to me. So for a classic movie suggestion, now it is the holiday season. And so I should probably suggest a good holiday movie, but really, do I need to say Miracle on 34th Street again? I think for the last couple of years, I've been saying watch Miracle on 34th Street. And the other one that is also a favorite for whatever reason at this time of year is called A Pocket Full of Miracles. That is a fabulous movie. It's one of my favorites. And one of the favorite lines ever in a movie for me is where she basically, it's kind of like a, not a rags to riches, but what do you call it? A chameleon? No. What's the My Fair Lady, but there's another word for it. And I'm drawing a blank because it was also a movie. It'll come to me as soon as I'm done recording. But anyway, she goes from basically the lead character, Betty Davis, she goes from a very poor, not quite homeless, but, you know, she's unkempt, and she basically offers apples to people for money. And through a series of events, a mobster transforms her into a noble lady, so she can fool her daughter, who already believes she is a noble lady, who's coming here to introduce her fiance. She doesn't want to show her daughter that she's actually poor and almost homeless. She wants to present herself the way she's been writing letters to her as a noble lady. Anyway, there's a line in there where one of the guys who works for the mobster, he says, it's like a cockroach turned into a butterfly. And the way he says it, it just always tickles me. So anyway, A Pocket Full of Miracles is a great movie. I don't know why. I can't, like, there's not necessarily a Christmas theme to the movie, but it's just one of those where it's a feel good, change is coming, believe, family, comedy, like, element that I just love around this time of year. So I should talk about that kind of classic movie. But the one that I more recently watched with Sam that she really enjoyed and thought was funny was one of my favorite actors, Cary Grant. And I also really like Anne Sheridan in this, is I Was a Male War Bride. Now, what was really cute was Sam, she doesn't really get why there were so many quote unquote war movies made in this time period, like the 40s. We know why, but, you know, she's like, why? You know, she just didn't get it, like, about movies made about a war going on and a romance or a comedy, that kind of thing. So she's a little confused by that. It's kind of charming to see because she's like, well, you know, what do you mean they don't have cell phones? What is that thing he's holding? That's a phone. What is that thing rolling? That's a rotary dial. Like, it's just, it's kind of funny. Like, she's not getting, like, why is there no modern technology in this movie? Like, what is the deal? What do you mean he's sending a telegram? What's a telegram? Like, and why is the word stop in there every other? These questions that she has, it's just, it's kind of funny to watch a classic movie with, you know, an elementary aged kid. Yeah. She doesn't ask as often because now she's seen enough movies that she kind of just shakes her head about it. But this one, it came up several times. And this is a movie where I think he's French and she's an American. It's during the war and they fall in love and they want to be together. And so this was also very separated, you know, like men and women and them even being on being on a plane together. Like, there was very much separation of the sexes. And, like, there was the matron who watched over the women in the military, you know, and that was her job, to keep the men away and that kind of thing. So, it's definitely one of his better, not slapstick comedies, but romantic comedies, where he has, Cary Grant, has a lot of really good lines and expressions and just quips about these kinds of things, because he essentially has to pretend to be a woman and dress up like a woman, and he is an ugly woman. He's not attractive. He's such a good looking man, like so handsome, but like, he's not a good looking woman. So, yeah, and it's just kind of funny because it's kind of one of those movies that to remake today would be very different, like, especially with a lot of the current events going on. But yeah, it's one of those movies that's very charming. And like I said, Cary Grant, of course, steals the show. That's, you know, why he's the lead character, but Anne Sheridan playing with him again, you know, as his female counterpart, she holds her own. There are a couple of movies he's been in where I didn't think that the female character really held her own the same way Anne Sheridan does in this particular movie. It's very funny. It's not very long. I think it's like a little over 90 minutes long, but it's good. And there's a couple of other actors and actresses that you may recognize if you watch a lot of classic movies like I do. So that's one that I recommend for fun. I Was a Male War Bride with Cary Grant and Anne Sheridan. For books, oh my goodness, in the last couple months I've read so many, so I don't necessarily have one to recommend, but I will say, in my book club, we read and reviewed Ghost at a Watchman by Harper Lee. While I wouldn't necessarily say that I thoroughly enjoyed it the same way I thoroughly enjoyed To Kill a Mockingbird, it was interesting. And we had one of the most interesting discussions we've had in our book club in quite a while over a book. Because there were a number of thoughts and things that came out in both Scout and Jem and Atticus in Ghost at a Watchman that for many of us who had read not too long ago or more recently To Kill a Mockingbird, to compare and contrast the two was really an interesting discussion. And it was very evident that this was her first book prior to writing To Kill a Mockingbird and working with a really good editor, because there were definite things in Ghost at a Watchman that she had been able to clean up a lot in To Kill a Mockingbird, which made it, you know, be considered one of the best American novels of the 20th century. And I can see why. Ghost at a Watchman would not have been considered that if that had been her first book published. And I know there's all kinds of feelings and opinions about Harper Lee and this book being released. It was our book club pick, and I hadn't really felt a strong desire to read it up until then. I'm glad now that I did read it And, you know, frankly, how do I put it? A bad book by Harper Lee, to me, still beats out a bad book by a lot of other authors. It's still a good story. She still tells a good story. So I will leave it there. The other one that I enjoyed was Furiously Happy by Jenny Lawson. This is nonfiction. She wrote Let's Pretend This Never Happened. She is the bloggess from the bloggess blog, thebloggess.com, a very popular blog. And what's excellent about this book, well, excellent and also confusing. I listened to her read this book on Audible, actually. And it took me a little while to get used to her voice. The content and the way she wrote this book, at times I had to stop it because it was almost like a run-on sentence and you wanted her to come up for breath because you needed to come up for breath because she was kind of going on and on and on and on with this crazy story, which can be a lot like reading her blog. But in a more condensed version because she's trying to get it all out, a lot of thoughts out in this one book. Whereas in a blog, she can kind of, you know, spread it out over several posts, I guess. But so there were parts where it was kind of like a little too wackadoo for me, but I kept going with it. And I'm glad I did because throughout some of her funny stories and anecdotes that she puts in this book, she talks very frankly about dealing with mental illness and what it's like to be in her head and the way she thinks. And this is not her trying to play act for her blog and her readers and listeners of, you know, her New York Times bestselling books. This is truly how she thinks. And this is truly how she interacts with the people she loves and who care about her and who help her through her depression and just the thoughts and things that come with that and being a mother with mental illness. And she talks very frankly about those things. And, you know, it's very hard not to be touched by it because, again, she speaks very openly, very frankly about it. She is funny. She relates it in a way that is funny, but at the same time, you feel the pain she is in. You feel the sadness she sometimes has about this and what it's doing or could be doing to her daughter, to her husband, to their relationship, to her future daughter, you know, and those kinds of things. And you definitely empathize with her at several points throughout the book, or at least I did. So I'm very glad that I read it. It's not a book I would reread again because, like I said, there are quite a few points in there where it goes a little off the rails too much for me. But I got through it, and I'm very, very happy I did. I really do recommend that book. Even if you don't struggle with mental illness or severe depression like she does, but you have someone in your life or you know someone, or you just want to have a better understanding of it so that when you are, like a lot of us will be one day, confronted with it or know someone who is dealing with it, while you can't necessarily say Jenny Lawson is everybody who's dealing with this because everybody deals with these kinds of things differently, it'll at least give you some insight into some of the things that, you know, she does put out there about how to help or what not to say to people who are dealing with their mental illness, which is they deal with it on a daily basis, but she admits that, you know, there are definite periods of time where people are in their lowest of lows or their highest of highs, which is what she defines very early on in the book as her being furiously happy, which after she really explained the reason she gave the book that title, you totally got why it was perfect for her and the way she described the way she wanted to be and to come out on the other side of this the struggles that she knows she has and will continue to have throughout her life with her mental illness. So she does it in a very, very good way. So I really recommend that one. Another book that I finished a while ago was The Scam by Janet Ivanovich and Lee Goldberg. And this is another, I think this is the third in the series, The Job. And I'm forgetting the other book, but the Kate and Nick series that I've enjoyed. Tricky 22 recently came out, which is by Janet Ivanovich in the Stephanie Plum series. And I have that to read, but honestly, I've said before, while I'm in it to the bitter end, and I will definitely get around to reading Tricky 22, she's 22 books into a series that is starting to become a slog, because I really want her to have Stephanie make a decision and just move on from there. Even if she wants to continue the series, she needs to move on from that decision that she needs to make. But in this newer series, which I'm thoroughly enjoying, I think it's fun. It's just a fun comedic book, and it's a comedic series. And I like that she's collaborating with someone, because I can tell now, especially this third book in, I can tell where his influence is helping the series move along. And it's, while it's a little bit more of the Janet Ivanovich formula working here, which, you know, I think from her perspective, if it ain't broke, why fix it, in terms of her formulaic writing. I like that she's collaborating with someone, because I can tell the influence it's having in the storyline and moving it along. So I enjoyed this one. It was a very quick read. I think I read it in a day or two. It was just another good one to kind of fill in. I also finished, finally, I don't even think I mentioned that I was working through A Little Life by, I'm going to butcher her name, so I'm not even going to try. But if you look up A Little Life, it almost won the National Book Award. That's how highly praised and reviewed it was. And everybody in publishing was talking about this book for a while there, especially I think over the summer. It was just everywhere I was getting it. And so I decided, I mean, it's over 800 pages long of really, really literary writing. I'm talking, I consider myself to be, you know, a well-read, well-educated person, and I was pulling out my dictionary or Googling words several times throughout this book, quite a few times. And all I will say about this book is, about A Little Life, is if you really like literary reads and writing and beautiful, beautiful prose, I highly recommend it. If not, I highly don't recommend it. This book it tore me apart in parts. I mean, she is extremely graphic about some of the abuse the main character takes, but then she flips it and you are crying in joy. I mean, like, I had tears coming at certain parts, and I had to go back in certain parts because I'm like, I think I just read one of the most beautiful paragraphs I've ever read in all of my years of reading, and I need to go reread that and highlight it. But yeah, so it's kind of, for me, it was one of those books. So I think it took me about 8 months to get through it. And I'm so glad I did. I'm so, so glad I did. I will not reread it again in my lifetime. I will not go back and do that to myself again. But as an avid reader, as an avid fan of all types of writing, particularly beautiful prose, and I've committed myself to really, every once in a while, really challenging myself with some of the type of writing and even the genre of writing, that, you know, when reading is kind of your, not just your life, but like, I don't know how to put it. I'm really a book nerd, you guys, and you probably already know that. And it's not just like a book nerd in terms of, I like to read a lot of books. Like I really like the written word and just how writers put together books, and I talk to people all the time about that kind of thing in writing. So it's kind of like the book nerdery is at, sometimes can get to several different levels of nutso. But anyway, I'm so, so glad I read this, but I really would not recommend it to a lot of people. And I'm certainly not saying that because I don't think any of you aren't intelligent enough or, you know, savvy enough or sophisticated enough to read this. I would just say you really have to be in the mood to have all the feels for this book. Because I've talked to people who were like, oh, I couldn't put it down. I read it from cover to cover in like a week. And I was like, yeah, that was not me. This sucker, I had to walk away from it for like 3 or 4 weeks at a time before I was willing to go back and do that to myself, because it was a slog at some points. But she is one of the most amazing writers I've read in a really, really long time, if not ever. But I don't think I'd say ever, but yeah, she's very, very good. So I did want to put that out there. Because on the other side of this is kind of like, when I finished it, I said to one of my coworkers, because I was at work when I finished the last page, I went, I really feel like I should be getting a medal right now. There should be like a trophy waiting at the end of the line when you finish this book. And she just laughed and laughed. But anyway, so those are my recommends, not recommends for you this time around. And that's pretty much all I have. I'm really glad that I was able to finally record this. Hopefully it will work again next month when I do come back and update you, and we will see what kind of crafting I've been able to do. Thank you in advance for your comments and support for the podcast. And for those of you who've hung in there with me through 5 years, an extra hug and thanks for that. And I will talk to you soon. Everyone, take care. You can find the show notes for this episode and all the others at my blog, craftygardenmom.com. I promise I will shoo the crickets away for the show notes for this episode, where I will post links to some of the things I talked about. If you have any questions about what I talked about, or comments, or want to throw me a line of, hi, how are you? Happy holidays. Send it to me at TanishaQuilts@yahoo.com. I am on Facebook. I am Tanisha Nurse there. You can find me and friend me. I accept friend requests there. I am in the Twilters group, so you can find me there as well. On Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram, I am Crafty Garden Mom. I hope to hear from you or see you around at any of those places. Happy holidays. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.